This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 94-year-old Marvin Shields of Visalia, California, originally from Warren, Michigan. When we left off, he told us how looking through the sight on a 5-inch gun aboard the heavy cruiser USS Pensacola, he had seen both the first flag atop Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi and also the second flag. Maybe you didn't realize there were two flags. Maybe you thought the famous Joe Rosenthal photograph, one of the most widely viewed images in history, was the only flag that went up there. If so, here's a brief explanation for you. The Battle of Iwo Jima lasted from February 19th to March 26th of 1945. Mr. Shields and the Pensacola were there bombarding Iwo before the troops ever hit the shore. On February 23rd, at about 10:20 a.m., a combat patrol of U.S. Marines made it to the top of Mount Suribachi. They had brought along a flag that was only about 4.5 feet by 2 1/3 feet, and when they reached the summit, they put that flag on a pipe and stuck it in the ground. The Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal, happened to have just hit the beach below Suribachi when that flag went up. He saw it, and he wanted the flag as a memento. Chandler Johnson, commander of the 2nd Marine Battalion, wasn't about to let that happen, so he sent orders to secure that first flag ASAP and have a second, bigger flag sent up to the top of the mountain. That's the one you see in the famous photo. What many don't know is that the first flag was also photographed by a man named Lewis Lowry, who was working for Leatherneck magazine. In fact, the story goes that Lowry was coming down Mount Suribachi while Rosenthal was headed up. Rosenthal and his group almost turned around and went back down, but Lowry told them the summit was a great vantage point for photographs. The rest is history, but the harsh reality of that history is that 3 of the 6 men shown raising that flag did not survive the Battle of Iwo Jima. There's a little background for you. Now let's get back to our guest Marvin Shields. He didn't know any of that backstory. He just saw the flags up there, a smaller one than that second bigger one. And when you saw that, what did it mean to you?
We captured it. We captured that island. And
that was a big deal to you?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't know how much battle was left and how many Marines would die taking that island, but seeing that flag up there meant something to you.
Oh, yeah.
Can you help us understand what you got from that? Did you feel a rush of emotion or adrenaline?
No, because they were firing at us and we were firing at them.
Well, maybe here's the question I need to ask you. A little more recently than 70 years ago, just in the last year, you had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. You visited the National World War II Memorial, which I know is very powerful.
This April.
Yeah. But you also got to see the Marine Corps Memorial and that statue of Marines atop Mount Suribachi with a flag in their hand. What did that mean to you to see that spot?
What fazed me most of all of them, the Honor Guard, changing the guard that day, I enjoyed that real well.
At the Tomb of the Unknown.
Yeah, but they really faced me, the Korean War, the statues coming to the field.
Yep.
They looking at each other's back. That fazed me real. They looked so alive. You see the pupils of their eyes.
You almost feel what they went through?
Well, they look like they're watching each other's back.
Yeah. What did you think of when you looked at that World War II memorial, and they've got all those gold stars representing 400,000 who died in World War II. Does that number weigh on you, 406,000 Americans?
No.
But you're glad you didn't add to that number.
No.
Anything else from your time at Iwo Jima that stands out to you?
No, it wasn't after that before we went to Okinawa.
Right.
I was put aboard a ship. I was hauled back to the States and put in a Mare Island hospital.
Because of malaria. So was that the first time you had malaria?
Well, I had it twice that month.
Most people listening have never experienced malaria. What does it do to you? What did it do to you 70 years ago?
You get cold. You can put every blanket or everything on you. You're still cold. You shake. I remember traveling with an ambulance too, picking other people along the road, and I was just there's no control. You're just phased out, shaken, can't get warm.
Pretty helpless feeling.
Yeah, but then when they give me the shots in the, over, and when I was in the hospital, they give it in the hip there. I was in top bunk, and you sleep right through it.
Mm-hmm. So you got off the Pensacola before it was involved at Okinawa?
Okinawa, yeah. That only lasted a week or two, I think.
Yeah, but it had some close calls at Okinawa. Some torpedoes almost got the Pensacola at Okinawa. So maybe it's a good thing you got off the ship. And I know you think it's a good thing you got malaria, right?
I think the Lord was watching my guide all along.
When I say that I know you're glad you got malaria, some people are listening and saying, what in the world is he talking about? But there's a really important reason that you needed to have malaria, because that's what put you in Mare Island Naval Hospital.
Yeah.
If you weren't in Mare Island Naval Hospital, you wouldn't have met your wife. Tell me how you met your wife.
She met me.
She met you. You didn't meet her. How'd it happen? Give me the story.
No. No, I'm not going to bring that out.
Was she taking care of you? Were you her patient?
I was one of them.
You were one of her patients.
Mm-hmm.
She probably had a lot of patients that thought she was kind of cute.
Yeah, she was cute.
How'd you rise to the cream of the crop? How'd you get her attention?
I don't know, but we were married 52 years.
You must have done something that made an impression.
Oh, my travels after the war helped a lot. She was a divorcee at the time.
Mm-hmm. But have you ever thought about that? That if you wouldn't have gotten malaria, you wouldn't have been in the hospital to meet her?
But there was so many things wrong with me. 4 years down below in the fire decks and that fire rooms, I was just glad to get out. I was glad to get in, damn glad to get out.
Yeah. Took a toll on you.
Yeah. And I was 175 pounds when I was playing football. And when I got discharged, I was 133 pounds.
Whew.
I was skin and bones.
What was all that from? What was the biggest challenge? Is that malaria?
No, I had other sicknesses too. I was in the McClellanfield Hospital. I was in the Ships Hospital. Well, and then I was in the Hawaii Hospital. But I was pretty sickly then. So just run down.
And you said a moment ago that you felt that God was always watching out for you. What are circumstances from the war where you look back and feel that that was really the case?
I figured, why am I still alive? People around me were burying them every so often from ship, put old iron and stuff in the wrappings and dump them overboard.
Burial at sea is a pretty somber occasion, isn't it?
Yeah, if you die during the daytime, you're buried at night. And if you're dying during the night, you're buried in the morning.
Does that desensitize you at all to it when it happens so often?
I got used to it.
Maybe this isn't an easy question to answer, but what would you say was your closest call, the closest you came to not coming home?
I had a picture. I was going from duty to my gun, and there's a jet plane over the... We hung our bedding on the rails so we wouldn't get a lot of flak.
Mm-hmm.
So this plane came past us, and the Jap looked at us and went on, and he crashed into another ship over there. I looked at him, and he looked at me.
You're on the deck on the way to your gun. There's a kamikaze pilot within range of your ship.
Well, and when I was coming out the door, he looked at me, and I looked at him over top of these beddings hanging on the rails, and he kind of waved like that and then smashed.
He knew he was about to die.
Oh, he that was meant to die then.
But his decision could have cost you your life had he gone into your ship.
Oh, yeah.
But he went to another ship. I guess that's close enough.
Yeah, that's a couple seconds apart.
That experience on the honor flight with all those other World War II veterans you went with, what did that mean to you? What did it do for you? What did it tell you?
What it meant to me is kids and people are so nice. Kids... 9, 10, 11, shaking your hands, you're going through the... Well, I was on a walker then, so they would reach way out the crowd, you know, and shake hands, and they're so nice, and they got letters there that they wrote to us aboard ship and that. I'm saving them and probably take them with me when I die. Yeah, I've got letters in there from the kids in Fresno and all...
Yeah, and you got letters from family members and people who knew you, but you're talking about letters from people you never met.
Yeah.
That are writing to you saying, thank you for what you did. And that's meaningful to you.
Yeah, they were so gracious. I mean, I didn't see a bat getting a whole bunch.
Did it make you feel like somebody got it? Somebody understood?
Oh, yeah, they were crying. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had handkerchiefs out and everything.
Did it make you feel like you did something worthwhile?
Yeah.
What are you most proud of with regard to your time in the Navy?
That I got back, and my brothers got back. Three different war zones, and all of us came back.
Mm-hmm.
I got my pitcher and my three brothers over there.
Well, before I forget, I want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a little bit about it. What keeps you going?
I don't know. But I hope to live to be 100.
Yeah? Well, how are you going to celebrate when you hit 100?
Tap dance.
You still tap dancing?
No. I got one leg.
But you'll learn for that occasion.
I'll tap dance on one leg if I live that long.
Here's a tough question. You lived through World War II. You spent most of the war in the Navy. What do you think the rest of us need to know, those of us who weren't alive during World War II? What do we need to know about you and all the guys you served with?
Just keep on thinking of us. Just keep on thinking we were there.
Is there one engagement that you were involved in that you look back on and say, that really made a difference?
Yeah, we're getting pretty close to the end of the war then, but I didn't like us dropping the atomic bomb.
Why not?
Innocent children, civilians, because it was meant to be dropped one place that was fogged in.
Yeah.
So they went and dropped in another place. They said it'd last another couple of years, but we're already in Japan.
That's a tough one. Did it save more lives than it took?
Yeah.
But would have those been combatant lives and not civilian lives? I hear you. Was there anything else I didn't ask you about that you think people ought to know?
Well, I was a loner during the war, too. When I was on duty, I was strict.
Mm-hmm.
Off duty, I was the best guy to be with on liberty. What hurt me is the day the war ended, whether we're still being treated for malaria or whatever, skin cancer and stuff like that, they emptied the hospitals.
Hmm.
They gave me 30% disability.
Mm-hmm. I guess the last question I have for you is, what would you say is the most important thing you got from your time in the Navy?
It would be my discharge for one thing. I'd finished my high school out while I was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. In general quarters, I'd be studying to the Madison, Wisconsin University.
Oh, okay.
So when I came out of the service, I walked across the stage to get my diploma. I was 25. They thought I was a janitor.
That's great.
I was 25 when I got my diploma.
And now he's just months away from 95. Marvin Shields of Visalia, California. Again, you have a chance to meet him and quite a few other World War II veterans in Visalia on August 15th. It's one of a series of events all over the country as part of the campaign to keep the Spirit of 45 alive. If you go to spiritof45.org, that's spiritof45.org. I also have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. You'll find a list of events marking 70 years since the end of World War II. These are events all over the country. For example, if you're one of our friends listening on KYKN in Salem, Oregon, a six-city concert tour across the state of Oregon starts in Salem on August 9th, and that information is there online. Wherever you're listening today, there's a good chance there's a Spirit of 45 event or two or three of them in your area. And if you do happen to be somewhere near Visalia, California on August 15th, I hope you'll come because I'll be there speaking. Mr. Shields, quite a few other vets will be on hand. A 16-piece 1940s band is going to play. All the proceeds from the evening will support Central Valley Honor Flight, part of the National Honor Flight Network, sending our veterans to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. We're out of time on Hometown Heroes today, but maybe I'll see you there on August 15th as we celebrate an era of our history that underscores that simple truth I try to share with you each week. Freedom is not free.